Hey gang, are you new to this podcast? Have you subscribed on iTunes and Stitcher and realized that you can only access the 20 most recent shows on these platforms? Do you want to binge on How Did I Get Here? Well, check out our archives available for free. Simply go to howdidigethere.com, look on the right-hand column, and all 464 shows are easily accessible by month and year. Go listen to such favorites as Sweet Spirit, Elizabeth McQueen, Zeely, The Wind and the Wave, and many more. Just go to How Did I Get Here, check out our archives, start listening, and let's get down.
And you may ask yourself,
how did I get here? And now here is your host, Johnny Howdy.
When we talk.
All right. Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a fantastic show for you guys today. Filmmaker, video director, John Valley is here. He is fantastic. You might know him from the Sweet Spirit video, Baby Doll. The Sweet Spirit video for Baby When I Close My Eyes, which is where I first heard of him, is in those two videos. And I reached out to him and I was like, hey, do you want to come in? I ended up seeing a lot of other videos he made for Daniel Jack, Matthew Squires, Whiskey Shivers, tons of videos. Turns out he's making films. He's been making films since he was a kid. He's a fantastic dude. We had a great conversation, and sit back and enjoy my conversation with John Valley coming up in just a minute. But before we get to that, I got an email a couple of weeks ago from a friend of mine, Dave Dart, who reached out to me and said, hey, I've got this guy coming in, a rockin' Espanol guy that's doing a tour of the United States. He's from Argentina. His name is Valerio Rinaldi. He's a fantastic dude. He's got a new record out called Valerio y los Extravagantes. And he's playing tomorrow night, Saturday, February 20th at Fralo's in San Antonio, Texas. And then he's playing Sunday, February 21st, right here in Austin, Texas at Blackberry Recital Hall at 7:30 p.m. All right. So get out there and check him out. I got to talk to him on Skype when he was in Washington, D.C. the other day. So sit back and check out my conversation real quick with Valerio Rinaldi.
Jamás le mentiría, he jurado, son los hechos, así es como sucedió. He amado, he confiado, pero...
All right, so Valerio Rinaldi, right? That's how you say it?
That's it. Excellent.
Yeah.
That's it.
And
it sounds
funny for me. You're doing a solo tour of the United States right now, right?
Yeah, I've been playing in Washington, D.C. last Saturday. And I'm looking forward to playing San Antonio next Saturday and in Austin.
Right, and you're playing Saturday, February 20th at 9 p.m. at Fralo's, and that's in San Antonio, Texas. And then Sunday, February 21st, you'll be at Blackberry Recital Hall here in Austin, Texas at 7:30 p.m.
Correct.
Right? And you have a new record that you put out, Valerio y los Extravagantes.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's our last release.
Tell me about that. Like, how many records have you put out?
Well, like a solo artist, I did 5 records and 1 EP, you know, a small CD with 4 songs.
Okay.
And with the band that is Valerio and the Extravagantes, that was our first release.
Okay.
It contains 8 songs and it's... being composed with the whole band.
Yeah, and people can find that on Bandcamp. I'll post all of this stuff on the Facebook page and in the text of the podcast and stuff. So people will be able... I'll put links to all your stuff.
Mm-hmm. You can find it at Bandcamp, Spotify, you know, iTunes, the usual stores.
Yeah, yeah. Tell me, how do you like... when you tour here, you tour by yourself, but when you tour in Argentina, you tour with Los Extravagantes?
That's right, yeah. My friend Johnny. Yeah, well, you know, it's a kind of a budget decision.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, but, of course, when I travel in Argentina, that is a huge country, too. You know, it's we have 2,000 kilometers from the north to the south.
Yeah.
So it's big enough. And yes, I traveled with the band, with the assistants, the sound operator, the stuff. But here I am by myself and, a couple of friends as you that are always helping us to show our music.
Yeah.
And I have a manager here in DC that's kind of the epicenter of the whole situation, you know, that he can make deals with New York, Philadelphia, all the East area.
And you're working mostly like Spanish-speaking markets, and they're like, that's kind of what you push your stuff to, right?
Yeah,
obviously, because exactly. It's rock en español, right? Is that what it is, or is that
Spanish is great? Yeah, that's Thanks. The way we call it. It's like a big mark for this kind of music. It's rock en español. That maybe it also includes reggae, you know, ska, pop, rock, funk, but all the we sing in Spanish, so right. That's why it's called this way.
Right. Mm-hmm. Are you getting good crowds? Are people? Is there a good audience for that here in the States?
Well, look, Saturday night here was very freezing because we are having a very strong winter.
All right.
And we made it with 50 people. That was good for that because...
Yeah, that's good anywhere.
Yeah, I know, but it was really freezing.
Yeah.
And I have all kind of situations, you know, maybe when I go to San Antonio, I don't know really what is going to happen.
Is this your first time there?
No, my second time at this place.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you've played some festivals here, like South by Southwest and stuff like that?
Yeah, that's it. I did it three times. I've been there in 2005, 2007, and 2009, I guess.
Wow. You're due to come back pretty soon. You going to stick around for it? Or are you coming back for it? Or are you not?
Well, you know, there is a story behind this one because I used to know a guy that was called Brulki, that was one of the managers of the whole South by Southwest.
Right.
Brent
Brulki.
You know him?
Yeah, yeah, of course. Yeah.
We were very close friends. He has been in Argentina several times.
Oh, wow.
And he invited me when we met. At my country,
right.
He invited me to come over to Austin. He gave me the badge, you know, the whole hospitality situation.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but when I heard the news about his sad situation, I couldn't believe it, man. It was such a weird thing.
Well, yeah.
That's why I get over.
Yeah.
The Southwest.
Okay. Well, that's good that you have that connection with him. So so you play in Austin. How long of a show are you playing? It's just you by yourself, right?
Yeah, it's me by myself. Well, look, on Sunday that it's a concert planned by the Alianza Latinoamericana.
Uh-huh.
It's going to be maybe a longer concert. It's maybe an hour and 50.
Okay, cool.
And I have a couple of guest musicians that are going to play a couple of songs with me. We are going to do a small rehearsal on Saturday. And but I guess that Fralos would be two or three different small gigs because that the way it works in that place. I was told this way. So I try to get used to every requirement I'm asked to.
Yeah. Where else do you play? Do you play in all of the other Spanish-speaking countries like Mexico and Venezuela? And
no, not. I've been in Chile. Chile is very close to Argentina.
Right.
We are neighbors.
Right.
In Uruguay too. Uh-huh. In summer they have a very nice place that's called Punta del Este.
Uh-huh.
A very VIP beach with all that situation, and I try to go there every year. And I play in Peru too, in Lima.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's cool. And I made a very, very nice video at Machu Picchu.
Oh, nice.
Have you heard about that ruins?
Yes, of course.
Okay, that's
great.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, that's the places I go overseas. Not overseas,
but out of the country. Yeah.
And I played one time, I remember very well because it was really great. I played at the Fête de la Musique in Paris, in France.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. So that's what I'm trying to do, man.
Right. Well, man, I urge everyone to get out there and see you. I got to see a video that you made for Juicio, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, great video.
You did your homework.
Yeah. Thanks.
Excellent.
Yeah, well, that's my job.
No, you're a musician, too.
Right.
Very nice music. I read your whole story at the Wikipedia, and now I said, okay, man, I'm not talking to somebody.
Yeah.
He's the man.
Oh,
so
thank
I respect
you, man.
That.
Thank you very much, man. And I'm glad that we finally got to cut up and do this. But everyone should get out on Saturday, February 20th at 9 p.m. at Fralo's in San Antonio, Texas. On Sunday, February 1st at Blackberry Recital Hall in Austin, Texas at 7:30 p.m. And who are the people that are going to be sitting in with you here in Austin?
Sorry, again, that?
Who are the people that are going to sit in with you in Austin?
It's called the Alianza Latinoamericana.
Okay.
But it's like a Latinoamerican alliance,
uh-huh.
And they always produce an event monthly that's called Café con Letras.
Oh, okay, cool.
Cool. Well, that's the way it works.
Yeah.
And I'm supposed to get Latin and Spanish speakers in the audience,
right?
Because I mostly sing in Spanish, but I have a couple of covers in English, like Depeche Mode, David Bowie.
You know, very cool. What Bowie song do you do?
Life in Mars and Space Oddity.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
nice.
And with
the
band, I play Rebel, but I can't make it acoustic. You know, it doesn't
sound
the
same. Yeah, you need that riff. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm missing it.
Yeah,
I miss my band.
Well, you'll be back with them soon enough. I'm glad that you're able to make it down to Texas, and I do urge everyone to get out there and find you. I'll put links to all of your stuff on our Facebook page in the text of this podcast, and this will be out Friday, the 19th, February 19th. So, it'll be up. I can't remember who else is on the show, but it'll be you and someone else.
Okay,
but thank you.
Excellent. It's a kind of dream come true, honestly.
Well, thanks
for you.
Thank you so much, Valerio. All right, Valerio Rinaldi, everyone get out there and check him out. Thanks for being on the show, man.
Okay, Johnny.
All right. Valerio Rinaldi, he is playing tomorrow night, Saturday, February 20th at Fralo's in San Antonio at 9 p.m., and then Sunday, February 21st at Blackberry Recital Hall right here in Austin, Texas at 7:30. Get out there and check him out. Hey, while you're out there doing stuff, if you are in Pflugerville tonight, Friday, February 19th, Skyrocket will be playing at Hanover's. We go on at about 10. If you are in Austin tomorrow, Saturday, February 20th, come on out to the 1-to-1 bar. Skyrocket is playing. We go on about 10:30. Our friends, the Damn Torpedoes, the Tom Petty tribute band, is playing before us. They are fantastic, okay? So if you're out and about in the Austin, Texas area, or in the San Antonio area, get out and see Valerio, all right? Hey, let's sit down and talk to filmmaker, video director, John Valley. You can find his stuff on Vimeo and on Facebook. He is fantastic. I say get out there, see the video for Baby When I Close My Eyes and Baby Doll, both by Sweet Spirit. Their sensibilities together are incredible, and they make great art together. And so I reached out to John, said, hey, come over. He came over. We sat down, had a great conversation. He's a great guy with an incredible, incredible imagination, and I did say a fabulous eye. All right, let's talk to John Valley. Everybody have a great weekend. Let's get down.
I did.
You did?
Yeah.
Before the accident?
Yes, before.
Before the accident.
So when was that?
Like,
when was the accident?
2 months ago.
Okay.
Literally 2 months ago.
Okay, so you weren't, like, knocked out for, like, a year.
No.
Thank God.
No. I'm, like, you know, I've been able to start pulling a couple hours at this restaurant that I work at now, and just as a host, I can't, like, you know.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to carry anything.
Yeah, I suck. And so, and like, I was hoping to be back by February, but it's like, man, it just doesn't, it just won't turn over. It just, it's just locked in there. It's messed up. And I'm worried that there's, you know, maybe I waited too long to start therapy or something, but you know, what the hell are you going to do?
I don't know. So you're from Iowa?
I am from Iowa, yes.
That's unbelievable.
Yes.
Some weird stuff going on in Iowa. Oh, here, you want a piece of paper? To discard your gum.
My chewing apparatus.
Yeah, there you go. That might be a state I've never hung out there. I might have been through it.
Yeah, most people drive through it. It's not a hangout state, but it's pretty cool.
Yeah?
Yeah, I don't have any qualms about growing up there. And if there was more of a...
Scene. You'd be there. Know.
Yeah, and they've got a pretty cool theater scene.
Really?
You have to look for it. But I think they do.
Well, you like the... Well, like, okay, what town were you in? Des Moines? I mean, I just assume that.
No.
It's the only one I know.
No, I grew up in a tiny-ass town, maybe 1,000 people on a good day. It was, like, you know, super small. You know, you knew everybody. And but I didn't feel like it... It was a really smart town. I felt like people there were pretty smart and pretty, like, you know, they were, forward thinking, you know.
Yeah.
Not a bad place to grow up at all. I don't know.
Okay, it wasn't like Footloose or something.
No, it was not like that. I don't think so anyway. Yeah. And I mean, if I sit and talk with some of my old friends that I grew up with and went to school with, you know, all of a sudden, yeah, you do start kind of painting a grim picture of certain characters there. And it's like, ooh, geez, maybe you just block out some of the... shitty aspects of it, but for the most part, my memory of it's pretty great. I'm like, especially in this like hyper, you know, connected world that we live in, it's like I feel like I'm part of this like last little bit of people who kind of get to experience that in America anyway, that kind of
small,
like,
town.
And still
I see what you mean.
I was always very aware of it and just very like, this is cool, just, you know, appreciate this. And because my dad did a really dad mom and siblings did a really good job of kind of making sure that things were old-fashioned. Like my dad definitely had this kind of, you know, this kind of traditional sort of approach to life, not in kind of like a scary Footloose way.
No.
But you know, just doing work around the farm and stuff. It was kind of a farm, not really a farm, but I don't know. It was cool. It was really, at least it's cool to look back on now. I was pissed off a lot when I was a kid, but you know, when you look back on it now, it's pretty cool.
Did you feel like you had to get out of there? Because you went to school there.
I went to school there. I tried to go to a film school in Chicago, and my parents talked me out of it because I think they were afraid that I was going to get to Chicago, fuck something up, and then they would have to come bail me out. So they like...
Was that your... I mean, were you known for that when it was time to go?
I was a terrible student. student, and I was kind of a... I was sort of like a...
Well, were you like a dreamer? I mean, you gotta be. I mean, you're an artsy guy.
For sure.
I mean, were you...
Head in the clouds a lot. And
yeah.
I wasn't a bad kid, though. I didn't... Honestly, like, I didn't, you know, drinking and drugs were, like, totally a thing, and I just didn't get into it because... I was just too busy working on stuff. I was like constantly, like, if I wasn't in a play, you know, I'd be showing up at, you know, 7 a.m. to the school to go to my music groups, and I'm a terrible singer. And my music teacher had to sit me down after years of going to these like music classes, like all these extracurricular teams, and she had to sit me down one time and say, like, I think you need to stop. Like, you know, you're gonna. It was this particular competition that we were going to that I'd been training for months, and I fucking sucked, and I was tone deaf. And she had to sit me down the day before the competition and say, like, look, you're gonna embarrass yourself, and I don't think you should do this, because she was so unbelievably close with me. She was like a second mother to me, and she worked with me in the on the stage a lot. And I think she knew, and I'm glad she did. She was just super honest with me, you know, and you never get that really in this field, like honesty from people and what they, you know, what they really think of your work or what they, you know, these people that are close to you, especially the ones that you're working with.
Yeah.
You know, because I'd spend, like I said, I was in plays all the time and she was the music director. And so anyway, to get back on track, if I wasn't in a play, I'd be shooting a project or preparing for a project.
Right, because I read that you did, like, you shot, like, three features before you even went to college.
Yeah.
On what? Video?
DV.
Super, oh, okay. Yeah, digital okay. Video. Oh, yeah, because you're younger. How old are you?
I'm 29.
Okay.
So it just, like, got to where it was kind of available, you know? And so I borrowed the first movie I borrowed from a friend who... she like lined up this camera and I borrowed it for a few months and I shot and finished this movie and it kind of like was sort of this, hey, he's actually going to like follow through with this, even though it sucks, he's going to follow through with it and he's going to get this project done. And my brother, who's like a best friend of mine, you know, like pretty close with my brothers.
Older or younger?
Older. Okay. He's in the military and he did a tour in, would have been, I'm probably going to get this wrong. I think it was Iraq or Afghanistan.
Okay.
And he came back and had a shitload of money. And he went out and bought me like this kind of prosumer video camera that I then used for like the next, you know, couple movies.
That's a great term. I've never heard that, prosumer, but that I know exactly what it is.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Pro and consumer.
Yeah, exactly.
So it was like a little better than point and shoot.
Mm-hmm. It was probably, I think he put, you know, $1,000 towards the camera and then
it's amazing, then
bought this little media center computer, you know. And just went crazy with it. And I shot the shit out of that camera. I just used it constantly and just really got through
that.
So
when did you know, like, when did you know, like, you're out there in Iowa, when did you know, like, this is, I'm, like, theater and film and...
Theater when I was, like, eight, because I'm the youngest, so I had all these older siblings that were in plays. And although it was this small town thing where sports and that kind of business was like pretty, like, yeah.
Friday Night Lights.
Yeah. There was just a moment there where the theater department and the music department were kind of, like, neck and neck with that. It was, like, cool to be in the theater, and it was cool to be a musician.
Right.
Just for a second. And and my siblings were, like... They were both very good in their sports, and they were like getting these cool roles in the plays. And I was like, oh man, that's, I want to be like that. I want to do that. That seems like a cool thing. Cause I loved movies. You know, my dad's kind of a big movie buff, and he would always like, you know, rent movies, and we just grew up on constantly watching them. And, that's kind of, he punished me one time cause I wanted to go into town to play with my friends or something. And he like, was like, no, you're going to watch, forced me to sit down to watch Seven Samurai.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because he's like, you're going to like see this cool old movie and not... Because, you know, he knows that I'm just going to go into town and play Nintendo 64.
Yeah.
And just like burn the afternoon. And yeah. He's like, no, I'm going to show you this. You know, he did weird shit like that. Anyway, so he does weird shit like that. He's not dead. But yeah. I'm sure he's still kind of a kook. But... Where was I? What was I talking about?
You were talking about how you got into it. You were...
Yeah,
it
okay.
It was cool. Your older brothers were in...
Yeah, so there's no opportunity to act as a kid. And my uncle was living with us for a while, and he had this cool, badass little VHS camera and had all these action figures, and I wanted to act. And I was like, oh, I'll just make like little short films with my action figures. Because that was when they re-released all the new Star Wars toys in the mid-90s. They did like a whole new...
Yeah.
And so I had a shitload of them because I loved Star Wars. And so I would make these little like reinterpretation of Star Wars scenes. And then they turned into like monster movies or whatever. And I did that for a couple years just to act.
That's funny because you revisited that with that action figure video you did for...
New Medicine.
New Medicine, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
They had no budget. And they I had shot like a previous project for them. And that was... You know, that had a budget, and they're like, well, we want to do another one, but we don't have anything, but like, what can we do for cheap? And I was, the guitar player loves action figures of that band, and he had painted these Walking Dead action figures to look like the bandmates.
Okay, yeah.
And he's like, I've got these, what can you do with them? And I'm like, oh, like, I'm like, you know, that's like back to the grindstone for me there.
Yeah.
Or my wheelhouse, if you will.
Yeah.
Action figures, you know, playing in front of the camera.
Yeah.
And then but I do that for a couple years. And I remember I made my first one when I was eight. And I did that for a few years. And this older guy who's a good friend of my brother, one of my older brothers, they were like in college. And he's just like, man, you should he's like, you should make movies. If you want to be an actor, you should learn how to make movies because then you can like put yourself into the movies.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's a pretty novel idea. Yeah. You know, and I was like 12 or something, 13.
Yeah.
And that's when I was kind of like, okay. And I like
Boy, you know, who was that that told you that?
His name was Matt Teets, and he's a...
you owe that guy a lot.
Yeah, he's an incredible character. He's pretty iconic, and...
You still in touch with him?
Not really. I probably haven't talked to him for a few years, but he's still in touch with my brother.
Okay.
They're like best friends from college, and so they get together and kind of go crazy every now and then.
Right. All right, so sorry. So he told you that you should make movies.
Mm-hmm. And then that's when I started thinking about directors and like craft. And it was and it was that same, man, it must have been that same year. I remember my dad showed me, this is kind of odd now to say, but I was 12, but he showed me, he had this friend that had Dish. We didn't have cable or anything growing up. We just had the 12 channels or whatever you could get just off the antenna. But he had this friend who had this satellite business and could get all these movies free, and he would steal them, and he would video. I'm just thinking of my dad's friend. He's a funny guy. Anyway, and he would record these movies, and just, you know, you get those 12-hour tapes with four or five movies on them.
Right.
And I remember one weekend my dad showed me back to back. It was a Taxi Driver and Clockwork Orange. It was like,
that's
like
pretty heavy.
Watched it one after. I was just like, you're a little kid and you're seeing this.
Yeah.
And that was like, I was like, oh, I see like craft. I see like a technique there. You know, it's not just about actors. It's not just about, you know, there's like this artistry to it or something. And that was kind of like a shift when I was just like, yep, I definitely want to be a filmmaker now. It's like acting will always kind of be on the side, even though I kind of pursued acting pretty heavily for quite a long time. But yeah, it was definitely that. Is this going to be picking up?
Yeah.
This shit?
Yeah.
I got my trinkets around my neck.
I was wondering a minute ago what it was.
They're all stolen. I just see them and I like them.
So when you made those first movies, like what were those movies about? Like what does a little kid, like a kid make feature length movies about?
Okay, so I was...
Features. How long were they?
The first feature I made, I started filming when I was 15.
Okay.
And it was a superhero movie. It was basically, my favorite superhero growing up was The Punisher, and I...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the gun-toting kind of like psycho-military guy. And I wrote a full-length script for a Punisher movie I wanted to make in middle school. And I was like, that's going to be my first feature. And I could never get it made, and there it just sat and sat. And then... I was 15.
Wait, how old were you?
Oh, jeez.
Wait, when you started it, you said you were 8? No.
No, when I wrote that first
junior
script.
Junior high?
First script I wrote, I was junior high.
I like how you're in Iowa and you're like, and I couldn't get it made. It sounds like no studio would take my junior high Iowa guy Punisher script.
Yeah, what the hell? Come on. I think it was 7th grade or 8th grade or something, and I wrote this script. And yes, I couldn't get it done because we were trying to shoot it on VHS.
Right.
And then a few years go by and I get access to this DV camera.
Right.
You know, and that kind of just opened the doors to all these different opportunities and resources and just ways that I could move faster and get my stuff done in a limited amount of time. Anyway, so I take that script and I basically just change names and change scenarios to make it original. So I basically, my first movie is like it was 2 hours. It was it was a 2-hour like action film about a high school student who's basically the Punisher.
Okay.
So, yeah.
How many, like what was the cast? Like how many did you have in the?
Probably like 20,
wow.
20 people or so
that
were involved.
That's awesome. What an industrious little dude you were.
Yeah, that was quite a couple years there. And we only had three,
How amazing
tapes.
That you stayed with it.
Mm-hmm.
For a couple of years,
dude, it was a nightmare. It that was like just when iMovie on Mac computers was available. Mm-hmm. So it was like the first version, and I had this tech the IT guy at our school, really cool guy. I owe a lot to him too. His name was Jack Moore, and he saw that I was like really really passionate about this, and he would let me go into his office, because he was like the only one at the time who had access to these Mac computers, because they weren't like distributed out to the school yet.
Right.
And he's like, well, I've got iMovie on this and I can show you how to use it. And he would let me into his office right at the end of the school day. So it would be something I'd go to football practice or whatever, and then I would go in after football practice and the doors would still be open. And he had this computer set in the far corner of the room so that when I was sitting there, he could leave, lock the doors, and the janitor wouldn't, like, see me from the door.
Oh, that's cool.
And so I could stay into the night overnight at the high school, and I'd be editing this thing. And he did that for me for, like, the first year that I was editing this.
What a cool guy.
Oh, yeah, dude. That's, like, totally illegal. You're, like, not supposed to do that stuff. But he just, you know, he watched me grow up, you know, a small area. He, knows that I'm not going to do anything stupid.
Yeah.
And he let me do that. But it was something where, like, you know, when you go to cut, you've got your take, right? And it's 30 seconds of banter and the actor standing around. Then you say action. And then, you know, you have to find your little moment, right? Just basic editing jargon, right? When you would make a cut, you'd click cut. And then the paint wheel would start spinning on the computer. And it would take, like, anywhere from 10 to 15 minutes just to make a singular cut. And so you'd maybe be able to put together, like, a minute or two after about 15 hours of editing. And then, you know, half the time the computer would crash. Like, you couldn't – oh, that was another thing. You couldn't save, because if you click save, it was so – I had it filled with so much footage. It was just overloaded. If you clicked save, it took 2 days, roughly 2 days to save. So the computer would be, like, sat there locked up just spinning. And then I'd have to wait a few days, and then I'd come back, or Jack would be like, hey, it's done saving, you can come back to work. But half the time you'd be sitting there and you can't save because you're going to screw up your editing session, and then it crashes right at the end of the session.
That's
and so you, like, lose an entire
day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's, like, my little bit of, like, you know, when filmmakers talk about, like, oh, you know, like, you guys are so lucky you have this digital thing, you know. Yeah. It's like, that's my little bit of, like, now I can I can say, you know, if I
worked on iMovie 1.0.
Yeah, it's pretty, like, futuristic.
How did you show it? Like, when you finished it, there must have been some kind of, like, fucking premiere.
Very tiny. It was, so, like I said, I was in the theater there and was just always in and out of there. And I knew how to run the booth and all the, like, the projectors and everything and how to lower the screen. That they had a little screen in there. And our theater there was actually pretty nice. It was, like, one of those nice stone, like, very dark. And it wasn't, like, a theater that's on the... at the end of a basketball court or something.
Right.
It was like a standalone room. Anyway, I just set up a screening for anybody who wanted to come, and the only people that showed up were just the people that were in the movie, and then a few friends that I had kind of gained over the years. Because then that was, like, another big jumping point for me was I started doing community theater in this neighboring town that was, like, a whopping 30,000 or so.
Yeah.
You know, that was the big city for us. And I started doing community theater there, and then, like, started getting access to all these, like, you know, age-appropriate actors and actors who, like, really – people who are, like – you know, when you're in your 40s or 50s or whatever and you're, like, you know –
community theater
community
in Iowa.
Theater, it's like you – it's like
you're not, whatever.
Yeah. And I was going to say it's like you're not doing it just for shits and giggles, you know. It's like a lot of these guys that were doing it were, like – they had dreams of being actors, or they really care about it, you know? So you could, like, really utilize that. Cause that's a huge aspect, especially when no one's being paid and it's as cheap as it is. Like, you better make sure everybody wants to be there. And 9 times out of 10, they don't. And that kind of screws it up. But, it was a very cool, like, few years there where I then went on to shoot these two other features before I went off to college that utilized this acting pool of, like I said, age-appropriate people that now have all this access to just simple things like, I have more homes to shoot in now, or I have more locations I can draw from.
Right.
So it totally took, like,
you stepped up your game.
Mm-hmm. So and the fact that I finished that first one, they were all like, well, he's obviously going to get the project done.
Yeah.
Because anybody who works with, you know, in the arts, it's like, you're typically working with people who aren't going to, like, follow through. You know? They have the idea and then they don't.
Yeah. Mm. And I've done tons. And I've just given songs to dudes that are doing some movie where they show you a scene and it looks pretty good. And it's like their student movie. You're like, I don't care. Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Use a song.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of that stuff going on that never gets done. But did you study film at... Was it Iowa State or University of Iowa?
University of Iowa is what I ended up going to. Yeah, and they had a. I don't care enough to have looked at it, but I think I heard at one point they don't have a cinema department anymore. But they had one that was there for quite a while, and
it was called Cinema.
It was called Cinema and Comparative Literature, And I think the comparative literature aspect to it was actually the more important thing, because it was theory-based, the program. It was not production-based. So a guy like me going there was like kind of spinning your tires a little bit. Like, right.
You already had tons of hours on the equipment.
Yeah, and I was really looking forward to, like, you know, like I said, taking it to the next level. Right. And I got to, but not through the cinema department. I got involved with like a video production group there that was like just getting their hands on these. It was like the end of the DV era, and there were these cameras called DVXs and HVXs. Uh-huh. And the HVX, this is super nerd babble, but like they kind of like bridged this gap of like shooting on hard drives versus tapes. You could still shoot on tapes, but you could also shoot on these, like, you know, what were called P2 cards, but they're basically just glorified SD cards, just, right. You know, simple. Anyway, so I did get to really, like, explore and up my game there, but the program itself was pretty awful. I had a pretty awful experience with it, and I ended up dropping out after three years. Yeah, because I was in a couple, you know, I got into these grad workshops there and was developing a few projects through them, and it was just like totally getting in the way of what I was doing. Getting in the way. And I was an awful student growing up, and then when I got to college I kind of figured it out, and I became like a really attentive student, and I cared, and I showed up, and I mean it took a few years into college, I mean, but by the end of it I was like pretty like sharp with being a student, you know, and ooh, that workshop class that really stuck with me I was so pissed. Yeah. And I, because I just felt that I felt so wronged by the system, you know, I was like, I'm playing ball here. I'm paying you thousands of fucking dollars, and I'm this poor kid. I can't afford this. And, you know, my teacher's using the class to show off her work, you know, and get us, you know, because she was a classic case of a filmmaker who wasn't good enough to do it on her own. And so she becomes a teacher. And I'm not saying that that's the case for all teachers at all.
But that is a certain archetype.
That
person.
Is a certain archetype, and that is exactly who this person was. And I would, you know, I'd love to hear anybody else kind of contest that, because I had 2 years with her in two different workshop classes that were really, really intensive. And each time I proved myself, and she said that I wasn't, that my projects were unrealistic, and she graded me down for them. And then I would finish them under budget, like right away.
I had a little bit of that when I was in recording school. I had a recording class and I was in recording school, and if you were a guy in a band and you had a recording class where you had to record something by the end of the thing, mm-hmm. like a song for someone, who do you think the artist is going to be? If you yourself are an artist in 1987 or 88,
yep.
without any, like, it's so expensive to go to a studio. I had mm-hmm. tape and shit. So when I turned in my thing and it was me, the guy was like, well, first of all, I'm going to take out a couple letter grades because it was you. And I was like,
yeah,
what would you fail Prince? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because he played everything. Mm-hmm. Like, fuck you. That's crazy.
Total bullshit.
So yeah. So what brought you to Austin? I mean, obviously the historical, what was going on where you were like, okay, I'm going to split from Iowa. School bummed you out.
School bummed me out, and I stayed with my like group of guys until they graduated, because it was like this extremely productive and tight knit group of friends that we like all came up with. And so I was like, I'm not going to leave this. I'm going to, like, I basically stayed for my college period. I just wasn't going to classes for the last year and a half.
Okay.
And I just kept producing stuff, and I shot that feature and edited it over the course of like basically releasing. I released that movie, this feature. There was a very big production. Like right around when everybody else was graduating. So it was basically like was my graduation.
Yeah.
And I picked Austin because I knew that I'm like a grassroots filmmaker. I'm not, you know, I'm not much of a, I don't know enough. I'm not very technically inclined. So I know that if I try to go to LA or New York or Chicago and try to get in as like a
gaffer or something.
Yeah. So it's like not going to work. I'm a good grip. I gripped for a while. Okay. I gripped for a summer in New York, and I'm very good at that, because that's, you know, that's just knowing how to behave on a set and staying on task and being a good worker. You know, I'm a good, I can like move stuff around
good and soldier.
Set stuff up.
Yeah.
But I don't know shit about, you know, like what you really need. I mean, I know enough about lighting, and I know enough about technical stuff to be a director, and know like, oh, this guy is really good with lighting versus this guy. I'm going to work with this. You know,
yeah.
Basic directing things. It's basically just be able to see talent in right. actors, in crew right. people, and then get out of their way and let them do their things as much as you can. And so I wasn't going to go to some city that's going to eat me up financially and try to get a job as like a guy who's taking like a you know, bringing in footage to the computer for like the bigger editors to work with. Cause I just don't know how to do it. I'm going to screw it up. Yeah. I'm like my editing sessions on my computer are just messes. Nobody ever gets into it. Like I would never ask anybody to like sit down at my computer and start editing like one of these music videos because it's just so backwards the way that I work.
That's funny. Cause I feel the same way about mixing. Cause when I'm recording myself, I've gotten so used to for years doing it in this kind of environment with myself that I make a huge mess
mm-hmm.
and then my mixing is like just taking shit away.
Yeah.
But if I were to give it to someone else, they would think I had created the biggest piece of shit,
yep.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So you came here.
Yep.
Did you know people?
No, I didn't know anybody. The major thing. And so then the kind of final thing was, I had discovered Terrence Malick in college, and it just, that was like the next big kind of, so it was like Kubrick and Scorsese and that those like filmmakers, and lo and behold, that Malick came up during that time as well. But when I get to college, that's like the next big like aha moment of like, whoa, look at this guy's doing with filmmaking. You know, it's a kind of different sort of approach, and it really spoke to me. And that was it. I had no intention of ever being able to work with him. It was like I just felt drawn to the South. I felt like I was going to tap into some kind of creative energy, and you know, I've been here for 6 years and I totally feel like I have. I felt like, you know, if I've ever had any type of spiritual moment or some kind of connection to like this, a godly type of thing, it was that draw to come down to Austin.
Wow.
So, you know, when it's like in all reality, it's like I probably could have done, you know, fine if I would have went to LA or New York. A lot of my friends did, and they're doing fine, you know.
Yeah.
So,
well, it looks like you've done a lot of work, and I mean your mm-hmm. work is incredible. Like, seriously, like I didn't ask you to be on this show because a publicist called me or because you're a friend of a friend or like publicist. I literally saw your work and was like, I want to meet the guy that made this.
That's super
this
cool
video.
Yeah.
And then when I watched the rest of them, the one for Baby Doll, like, you're fucking hilarious in that, man.
Yeah, that was a good one.
You're
that one
great.
Really firing on all cylinders.
Yeah.
There. That was a lucky one.
Yeah.
Yep.
How do you, like, do you have to go and buy all the ball gags at, like, a sex shop?
Yeah. No, yeah. I had to like, order them. And the funny thing is, like, I found the cheapest ones, and I ordered them from China, and they weren't showing up. And so I started getting paranoid because the shoot's coming up. And then I call this place in America and I'm like, hey, can you rush these here? And I blew a bunch of money on them. But then I got my money back from the ones that didn't come from China. But somewhere along the line, they didn't stop the delivery of the ones from China. So I got like double the amount of ball gags all in one day. And I just had this like bag of ball gags. And they're all just sitting at home and in like my little prop box.
Are you single?
Yes.
I wasn't at the time. Nervous when they get there and see all those ball gags at your place. I'd put them in a drawer.
Yeah.
If I were you.
I had a girlfriend at the time, and she thought it was pretty funny. In fact, my wardrobe from that video is my girlfriend's lingerie. So ex-girlfriend's.
Ex-girlfriend's.
Yeah. She's dead. No, she's not dead. She's doing great. She's wonderful.
So how did you meet up with Sabrina and Andrew?
Well, honestly, I had my band for
what was it called?
We were called The Valley Forge.
Okay.
So yeah.
Well, I know that word, but okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was kind of this you know, rock band. Anyway, and I fucking loved Bobby Jealousy, and I loved Sweet Spirit, and I loved Giant Dog.
Giant Dog, yeah.
And just being the kind of opportunistic guy I am, I just bugged her for years, and I don't know if she would remember it, but I would send her messages being like, hey, I've got this gig lined up, you know, we'd get like one really good gig every couple months, and then we'd try to put it together, and I'd try to like entice her to get in it, but they were just too busy, and we're not going to draw anybody for them, and so it just never amounted to anything. And then but she knew who I was, and I'd met her a few times, and I started working at this restaurant a Blue Dahlia Bistro, little plug there for their restaurant, and really cool. Just everybody that works
there. It's a great place.
Yeah, it's cool.
By the way, yeah.
Yeah, it's good food. Everyone that works there is like some creative type, whether it's just a small endeavor. They're, you know, potters, there's painters, and there's a lot of musicians and a lot of actors and filmmakers that all work there. It's like this little like restaurant cove of like really creative people. And one of the guys I worked with is Josh Mary, who ended up becoming one of the guitar players for Sweet Spirit.
Ah.
And he and I just get along super well, like with just totally get each other and whatnot. And they... So they've got their EP that comes out that's really great.
Yeah.
And I'm you know, and you're hearing their name everywhere and yada, yada, yada. I'm like, why the hell don't they have a music video? I was like, what's going on with this? Like, have they just not thought of it? Have they not, is it just not on their radar right now?
Right.
And they were about to go on tour with Spoon. And I was like, ah, here's like a little moment.
Yeah.
And so
you need
a
video.
Yeah. 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 And I basically messaged Sabrina and I sent her my work and I just dumped all my ideas on her because I was like, I'm not gonna, like, if she isn't even able to see this email, because she's probably getting a shitload of emails every day, you know, she's a busy little bird. And anyway, so I just give her this idea and I say a few key words, and turns out she and I just totally see eye to eye on like filmmaking influences, and she really liked what she saw. And I said, like, I'm gonna do this video, you know, like super mondo cheap, under the table. It's just going to involve one actor basically and a few people. Like, you guys don't even have to worry about it. Just like, here's my idea and just let me do it. Like, don't stress out about it. And she's like, okay, whatever. You know, because it was nothing, no skin off their back, just to let me, you know, do my thing here while they're on tour. And my idea was, it's like, oh, I'll try to capitalize off of this tour and get a cool video out and try to like have it be that video at that time.
Right.
And it kind of worked, you know, and it we put it together really fast, shot it in like 2.5 days, just kind of nonstop. And they didn't know that I was the actor. I didn't tell her that because, you know, nothing in my reel or nothing about me suggests that I'm an actor and I know how to act.
Right.
However, to ask somebody to do that, to find a good enough actor and ask somebody to do that
exactly
as fast as we shot it, there was like no fucking around. It was just like, I had like literally every shot of that video. It's like a like decoupage editing. It's like Hitchcock used to do that. He would just shoot the moments because he knew how it was going to like edit together. That's basically how I did this, because I really wanted it to like really lock into the music.
Yeah.
And I just knew that like trying to find an actor who's willing to like work those moments out for free with me, because I wasn't gonna be able to pay anybody.
Right.
It's like, it's just not gonna work. And it's like, and I think I can do this role because I was in a couple production, like two versions of Cabaret.
That's what I was about to say. Mm-hmm. Reminds me of like the Joel Grey character.
Yep. And I just, for whatever reason, I really gravitate to those types of roles. They're really fun and they really tap into some weird kind of, it's very easy because actors just need to, a huge aspect is being able to relax into the role.
Right.
And to be playing something that is so, it's very human, but yet this kind of like far spectrum of humanity.
Sure.
It's such an easy place to escape to.
Yeah.
And so then, you know, as I'm trying to direct and work the day, it's very easy to kind of flip into the character, you know? And so it didn't really get in the way. Like this sort of how that would have been tough for, I think, for a different actor to do.
Sure.
Like it almost had to be that, like, I was so in my own world and thinking about the bigger picture of the video that I didn't stop to think about like, oh man, I was like, is this going to be really embarrassing for me to do? And it's like, am I going to make a fool of myself? And it was about halfway through production and I'm directing this room full of women actor friends of mine. And I'm trying to talk really seriously, but I'm dressed in like all this stuff. And, you know, it's like the you know, my wiener. My junk is just totally like cinched up to my body. There's nothing impressive about, you know, I'm not like a, you know.
Yeah,
I've never claimed to have a sexy nude body. I'm kind of more like a sock filled with pudding, is how I've put it. But like, just this kind of soft, waify boy, and I'm trying to direct them. I'm trying to be really serious and trying to like keep everybody in line because we're moving so fast. You can't fuck around.
Right.
And I just had this moment of like, fuck, like I'm almost 30 years old. You know, I've no. Nobody knows who the fuck I am. I'm not some like artist that people are like waiting to see, like
the next,
what's John Valley going to do next? You know, I'm a fucking nobody. And I'm making this thing. It's like, what the hell am I doing? Am I going to like totally embarrass myself? And I finished it. And I remember I went home to see my folks and I didn't say a word about it because I was just so embarrassed about it for a second. And the video actually premiered while I was at home and like leaving. And somehow my dad, who like did not see it at like, he's just not a computer guy at all, does not pay attention, just like knows nothing about social media. Somehow somebody showed it to him. And I was just like, oh, fuck, you know, like I don't, you know, that's just, I don't like that dynamic between, you know, it's like, but he liked it. And he gave me this like really nice compliment about it. And I was like, oh, that's great. And that kind of like helped me like, kind of shook me a little bit. Because it's like, I mean, I knew going into it that it's like, no, you're not going to make a fool of yourself. Like, who cares? Like,
not at all. I mean, it's just, it's, there's so much commitment to the character. And then the character themselves is so filled with bravado when they're, you know, singing and stuff. But then also you can tell there's like this weird shame going on inside of them that they're trying to hide. But they, you know what I mean? I love that.
Yeah, for sure. That was totally the character. And then, and it existed for a moment, like midway through the performance. Yeah, because I just had a moment of, a momentary lapse of reason, if you will. And, got really scared that I was like going to fuck this up.
Sure.
And maybe
that's what happens, I think, when you when you do something that's dangerous.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And that's people seem to have really responded to that. They really like how much I kind of committed to it.
Yeah. It would not have worked.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Without that level of commitment. It's like a Freddie Mercury level of like, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Insanity too.
Yeah. And I think I had to be distracted by the production aspect,
right,
in order to kind of like in that short
not
amount of
think
time
too much about what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, so there are other videos that you've done too that are like is it the Whiskey Shivers one, is that black and white one?
Yeah
that's, so, a cool, that's one. Really good. But you did even ones with just a band playing,
yeah,
like a video.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
they're beautiful. I mean, yeah, they're beautiful.
I love shooting performance videos, like where you just show the musicians playing. I know that's kind of like people, a lot of bands don't like doing that, and I understand why, but I really like doing that. I like shooting people. Like, it's I get to tap into that like last waltz thing, you know, like Scorsese, and it's just so cool. And like so many of my shots, I try to emulate that.
Yeah.
All over the place. But
is Terrence Malick and Scorsese and Kubrick, they're your guys?
Yeah, they're just really good. I don't know if they're my guys. I mean, Kubrick, I got pretty like down the rabbit hole with him and like went into all the conspiracy and read the books.
Yeah.
I got pretty obsessed with him. But I think it was just Scorsese, like a guy like Scorsese and his contemporaries. That was just, he was just kind of like, oh man, this guy's fucking awesome. And there's all these other filmmakers from that generation. And of course, before and the after, yada, yada. But
did you see that Raging Bulls? And no. Oh, Easy Riders and Raging Bulls. That's a book too.
I saw the documentary.
But I didn't read the book. I have the documentary.
Yeah, I thought it was super cool. I wish I would have read the book. It was one of the classes at my because, like I said, my film school is all about theory.
Yeah.
And so you had tons of classes where you got to read cool shit like that, and I just never got into them. I was just trying to like reach for the production classes. But all my friends read that, and it was kind of like this. I remember their first semester, they were all just talking about it because it's such a cool era for filmmaking.
Right.
And yeah, I just really respond to those guys.
Are you in? Oh wait, well, there's another video I wanted to talk to you about. Is the Baby When I Close My Eyes?
Yes,
the puppet video.
Yeah, that's a cool one.
Yeah, that's amazing. So I was reading the thing in the Chronicle where they had an idea of a gold guy coming out of.
Yeah, it was weird. So like, you know, like that first video was me just kind of being like, you know, hey, I've got this like little story, just let me do it. And then this next one was more of like a collaborative thing where we all had these visions and these ideas, and we just kind of threw them into the pot. And then I sort of just took it upon myself to be like, well, how do I string some kind of semblance of a narrative together, or some kind of, you know, arc to this? How do I tie these elements together? Because the song spells out the words lust and fuck, or fuck and lust. It's those two words, like during the verses, like she's spelling out these words.
Oh, right.
And so she had this idea of doing this Sesame Street thing with like giant letters, and she wanted to like almost shoot it like that. And then I got the idea of like, I started seeing the puppets from Sesame Street. Yeah. And so I was like, let's do that. Let's do the puppets. And because it's cheap. You know,
the situations that they're all in is just incredible.
Yeah. So it's like, how do I, yeah, it's all it is just, you've got these cute puppets, and now just, what's the contrast of them? And yeah. The song is about kind of, to me, the vibe I get from it, and, you know, I think the band kind of agreed with the sentiment, is that it's like, you're in love, and there's, you know, there's these, like, raw emotions that you have for people, but we live in this world that's pretty ugly, and kind of, there's that key line that says, you know, we can't afford another baby.
Right.
You know, and that was kind of the click moment for me, where it's like, okay, that's where I'm going to run with this, as far as applying these like social domestic situations to these puppets, was like, here's these people who want to have a child and they love each other, but they can't afford to because they live in like a, you know, a tight belt world, you know, and it's so.
But then it's also not very often that you get to see a puppet pee on a pregnancy test stick.
yeah,
and then
exactly.
Stab the other puppet in the eye with it. It's pretty fucking amazing.
Yeah, I'm sure that guy got pink eye from that, so.
Did you, are you working on any kind of like feature length?
I'm developing a web series, that is going to involve the puppets potentially. I don't know if I'm going to make it. I'm actually just writing it for myself right now. But I have these puppets that were sitting around my apartment, just hanging anywhere. My apartment gets scattered, and I was living with them for a few months, and then for a while I was living by myself in this kind of dank ass apartment down the way there, and was going through some rough times, you know. My girlfriend left me, and two of my best friends moved away. My band broke up, you know.
Yeah,
it was just one thing after another, you know, that then kind of ended with this, but I was feeling really just kind of this eerie sort of just being in this apartment by myself with nobody there, but there's these puppets sitting everywhere. So I got this idea to write something about a guy that, you know, lives with puppets, but that's another thing. I don't know if I'm going to do that, but it would be a web series. But
yeah.
I've been writing a feature for probably about 5 years based on an original play that was written at the University of Iowa by a playwright, a grad playwright there. And I've been in correspondence with her for about 5 years about this thing.
Wow.
And she, when I contacted her, the play stuck with me so much. I was like, this is a long shot. I'm going to contact her because surely somebody else has taken this on, or it's already been published and it's like part of some kind of, you know, there's theater groups around the country doing it, because a lot of the writers in the grad program at the University of Iowa, it's got a wonderful writing program.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for theater and for prose and poetry and such. It's known for its writing programs. Anyway, a lot of those guys that get into the grad program write these works that go on to, you know, they might not be like Broadway hits, but they get published and they get put on.
Sure.
And they,
yeah.
Anyway, so I contacted her about this play because I was, after so many years of seeing it since college, it still stuck with me because I started looking for something. I was like, I think I want to do another feature. I think I want to, but I want it to be small, and I want it to be something that could be contained on a stage. And I thought of this play, and I contacted her, and she's like, no, nobody's asked me about it. She's like, I haven't touched it since, you know, we did it. I was like, cool. Are you okay with me trying to develop it for a screenplay? She's like, yeah. And so while I'm doing all these, this band project and these music videos, I've slowly been picking away at this script. And I'm actually, for the first time in like, you know, let's see, I saw the play in 2008. Or 2009 or something. So for that, since then, it's like I've never spoken with this person. And I'm actually like talking with her this week because I've developed it enough now to where it's like, okay, I'm going to like start writing this thing, thinking that I'm going to get to shoot it. So I want to make sure that she still wants to sign off on it, because I've turned an hour-long stage play into an hour-and-a-half film.
Oh, wow.
And sort of like proliferated some of the characters, and there's more locations. And I kind of put my own sort of twisted perspective on it, because that's what
when she hasn't seen it yet.
No. So I'm meeting with her for the first time, and we've been corresponding for, you know, over 5 years about it, and
wow,
just all through emails. And so we're finally going to talk about it, because I was like, hey, I'm ready to take this to the next kind of serious level, but I can't do it unless you kind of like sign off on it. So I'm pretty excited about that. I don't know where that's going to go, but and if it doesn't work out, if she doesn't like it, it's no big deal. It's just been a big like learning experience for me to write this script, because I took it super serious. I was like, no fucking around, no, like, do your research, be a good student. Because so many of these other projects I did, all these features, I proved to myself that I can get a movie done. So it's like, I'm a good producer. I know how to, like, get through a day and do all this.
Yeah.
And I'm a good director. I know how to, like, wrangle everybody. But I'm a shit writer. And it's because I didn't do the work, and I didn't study how to write. And I don't put in the hours of research and really police yourself and make sure everything's ringing true, you know? And so that's what this screenplay has been for me, is like, no excuses. Like, you can't, you're not, like, I wouldn't allow myself to move on to the next stage unless I did checked all the boxes.
Right.
So it's been this like really thorough, against the grain kind of process for me, because I'm a horrible student. I'm a procrastinator. I work unbelievably fast just to kind of like shit stuff out, you know, because I have no money or resources. But this thing has been, it's like, it's just a screenplay. It's just going to be me and the writing program and paper, you know, so I don't have to involve anybody else. Just take as much time with it as you want. So, and I'm still, after all these years, like, even more excited to do it. So I'm kind of stoked
good.
About
that
it.
That must mean, I mean, it says something about the work itself, like what she did.
Oh, yeah. There's something
to keep
there.
You that interested.
It's a classic. It's a kind of a cautionary crime story. It's kind of Coen Brothers-y.
Oh, cool.
It's really cool. Yeah.
Have you seen any movies lately that you like?
Yeah, I saw The Hateful Eight
Saw it the other night, too. Did you see the 70mm?
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really, really liked it. Me too. I'm kind of a sucker for him. I'll kind of see anything that he does.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I really liked it. And I definitely need to go see it again to kind of make sure. I don't know how much of it was hyped up for me. Hyped up even in an opposite way, too, because people are kind of naysaying it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, he's kind of like Wes Anderson in the sense that they just do the same kind of...
Yeah.
They're living in the same world.
Yeah.
But, you know, so people can kind of get tired of that voice, and especially since he's kind of a pretty outspoken, you know.
Yeah.
But I love that about him, too. He's a really fascinating, like, figure to kind of, you know, just keep an eye on and watch. But I saw Hateful Eight. I really liked it. I thought it was cool. I thought the 70mm totally worked.
Yeah. It was gorgeous.
Yeah. So
I listened to this thing on NPR the other day. It's the Pop Culture Happy Hour. You ever listen to that?
Is it new?
It might just be a podcast. Might not be,
because I know an actual it seems show familiar, that they air. But I've been really bad with radio, not having a car for a few years.
It was funny hearing that argument. There was just a lot of like sort of NPR over political correctness, like, you know. Well, there's the amount of violence committed on Jennifer Jason Leigh, and like it turned into where it was like boing, boing, boing when they'd hit her, and yeah, it was. But that's what he does. Like,
yes, it's silly. It's just so.
Yeah,
I don't know. I've never been convinced by that stuff when people say that, you know, that this like desensitizes or proliferates violence or something. I don't know.
I don't know.
What's the there's somebody who said. Oh, it's a character from Scream, because Wes Craven, when he did Scream, he was returning to the genre and he was trying to leave it. He never wanted to be a horror filmmaker.
Right, right.
So he was returning to it because I think he needed a buck, because he had a few like stinkers, and there was like a dual picture deal. He was going to get to do Scream, and then the Weinstein Company was also going to fund this other like kind of like personal project of his, Music of the Heart, I think it was. And so he's like, fine, I'll fucking do a horror film again.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, then it becomes this like iconically important
yeah,
horror
so
film.
Yeah, so good.
And Skeet Ulrich's character talks about, is his character Bobby Loomis?
I don't remember the name.
Billy Loomis. And he says the thing about movies. He says, scary movies don't make psychopaths. They just... make psychopaths more creative.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, and I think I agree with that sentiment.
Yeah.
You know, all it is just, you know, like the worst case scenario is it could just give you an idea, you know, but it's like, if you're going to kill somebody, it's like, or if you're going to commit violence, or if you're going to be desensitized, it's like, I don't buy it quite yet that it has, that it's linked so strongly to that. I think that's just a very, very easy scapegoat, you know, to explain to people, the depth of like how twisted and deranged violent people can be, you know. It's like to blame it on a movie or a video game is like
that's ridiculous.
I think it is.
Does Terrence Malick live in Smithville?
No, he lives in Austin, I believe. Maybe he lives out in the Westlake area. I don't know. I never got to go to his house, but I was friends with him.
Oh, you were?
Yeah, and so that was another cool thing. It's like I came down here for Terrence Malick, and then like my first day at this restaurant. Remember, I told you the restaurant's filled with creatives and people working. My first day, my trainer, works with Beth Sepko's casting agency now.
I played her wedding.
Did you really?
Uh-huh.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So this buddy of mine, Stacy, she was my trainer, and she's like, "Oh, you're into movies, blah, blah." You know, we're kind of geeking out over that. She's like, "Well, why did you move to Austin as opposed to LA, New York?" And right. I say, "Well, I came down here for Malick." And she's like, "Oh," she's like, "Well, I worked there for years. I could totally get you in the door." I was like, "What?" And it was like that easy. And literally the next day, the guy that I needed to talk to, this buddy Wilson, showed up to the restaurant, and she just introduced me to him. And he's like, "Yep. Well, like we do need interns right now, so you can like give me your application and show me, like, you know." So then I get to show him all this work, and you know, I have a nice resume on paper, even though some of the projects suck, but it looks good on paper. And so then I get my foot in the door, and then
your reel also looks good.
Thank you.
I wanted to see all that laser shit that was going on with people.
The like the sci-fi action thing. Yeah, that's the feature I shot right at the end of college. That was like a massive.
It looks really good, man.
It's got some really cool parts in it, but it's ultimately kind of, it's not unwatchable by any means.
No,
but it's ultimately doesn't work. Because of the writing. I think I kind of chalk it up to my writing, but sorry, still, it's very cool.
So you went to work for Malick.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I interviewed with this who would be my office supervisor, and then who would ultimately become like a good friend of mine outside of there. And she's a filmmaker, and she just moved to LA. And I just acted in like a huge passion project of hers that she did this summer.
Awesome.
Yeah, and she was, you know, and that's a cool thing about the Malick office is, although, you know, a lot of people come and go there. It's like everybody seems to kind of take a little bit from each other, and we all kind of keep, you know, I'm like still running into people, and we remember each other, and. You know, I'm getting cast in this friend's movie that was like a huge undertaking for her and this huge project. And
what's going on up there?
Yeah, there's some shenanigans.
There's some weird stuff that goes on up there, noise-wise, that I don't understand.
Yeah, dude, living on like the yeah. the ground floor.
Yeah,
you just
weird.
Sit there and was like, what the hell are they doing? Are they just dragging like yeah. cinder blocks across there, like rolling golf balls?
Yeah.
But yeah, so. And I was only there for just shy of a month because there was a lawsuit thing that went on because an intern, I think it's in some part linked to this business that happened with the Black Swan production, Aronofsky's movie. Mm-hmm. And there was an intern that was mistreated, and she was this whistleblower for how, you know, interns in the film industry are pretty, you're not abused, but
in
it's
in all
like,
the industries. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're
yeah.
an intern. You're an intern, man.
Yeah. And so they blew the whistle on that, and tiny little independent productions, even as big as Malick, it's like they still have to be careful. And so they ended the intern program.
That's funny because like a year ago, I was at a bar, and I was telling the people that owned it. It's like, you know, I could really use an intern for the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, someone to.
Yeah, they're helpful.
Push stop. Anyway,
yeah,
whatever.
Exactly.
And they pointed out this one girl. She was so cute, and she I was like, I'm not.
Yeah,
that's like a lawsuit. Like, even if I didn't do anything, like,
exactly.
I don't think I'd want to be in the position of having the super hot 19-year-old.
Exactly. It's tough.
Chick hanging out of my apartment all the time.
Yeah, you're totally likely yeah. to get yourself in some trouble.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah,
but they were just being proactive, I think, and smart about it because they're like, this is eventually gonna, even though like,
what movie was it that they were working on?
I was there while they were like transitioning, and they were working on Knight of Cups, which is you know, the trailer's been released for that.
Is that the Ryan Gosling? And
No, yeah. That's the one with I think it's Christian Bale, and it's about like, I think it's about like Hollywood celebrity and excess, and Brian Denny, he's in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Natalie Portman, I believe, but they were doing that. And they were also prepping for the Ryan Gosling one that shot here in town. So it was kind of like a post and pre-production period that I was working on it. And it's just a really big shame. And they were really sad to see it go, I think. And they, like, you know, the producers and people that work there, they made their rounds. And they're like, we're really sorry we have to do this because, like, we know that, like, everybody loves being here. And we did. It was, like, a really cool place. It's not, like, shady or there's not, like, bullshit at all.
No.
I mean, compared to like what some people go through in the bigger cities on like much, much more like forgettable projects that aren't worth it.
Sure.
It's like to be able to be treated well and you're also like getting to be there working with Terrence Malick's productions.
Yeah,
like,
you're not doing Mighty Ducks 2 or something, you know? Yeah.
Great cinema. I was essential cinema, but it is not Tree of Life or it is not New World or all that stuff. So yeah, it was cool though. It was like you get to meet your hero. And it was like... That was very cool, and I got to geek out with them a little bit because
what are they doing?
I don't know. That was definitely a hammer to somebody's head. That was a finishing blow. They were strangling them, got them on the ground, and they were weary enough that the guy could grab his hammer and ball peened them right in the head. So.
Did you read the Sid Field, the screenplay, How to Write a Screenplay? Okay.
Yeah.
I did too, just a year ago.
Yeah. He's kind of got an annoying voice at some points, but there's a lot of good information in it.
Yeah.
I really studied his and Robert McKee's book.
What's the Robert McKee's book?
It's called Story.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen that, but I've not read it.
Mm-hmm. And it's a very similar kind of approach. You know, it's this very formulaic kind of breaks it down to a science.
Yeah.
So, I was at my wit's end. Like I said, I was doing all these projects. I was like, what's the fucking deal? Like, why can't I make a good project? You know? And it's like, I think it's because I'm just not a good writer. And I'm of this generation of like these people who are coming after your, Christopher Nolan,
right.
Tarantino, Kevin Smith, and we think that we're supposed to be writer directors. And
right.
It's like, no, there was like a huge history in cinema where if you're a director, you're a director and you find good stories. And
yeah.
So I'm kind of like, I think that's why music videos have been really good for me, because I'm working with basically a script that somebody else wrote and
right.
I'm like applying my vision
There's
to it.
There's that sort of like Sorkin, and I think Kevin Smith suffers from it too, is their voice is so strong that every character sounds like them.
Mm-hmm.
Talking.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that can be like, yeah, to the project's detriment, even though it's like a very lovable and...
Yeah, if you like that voice, you're going to like those people, but
yeah.
They're not going to make a movie that's going to cross into... I mean, I guess that's wrong to say about Aaron Sorkin, but sometimes when you watch shit that he does, it's just everybody talks exactly alike.
Yeah,
same with Kevin Smith.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that, and it's, you know, fortunately they're doing a lot of work, so they have more opportunity to, like, do good stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, every now and then you're gonna miss fires. But.
Yeah. So your stuff is all, it's up on Vimeo, and people can find you on Facebook if you're a band out there listening to this and you mm-hmm. want to, and you go and check out these videos. John Valley on Vimeo. Tons of videos. There's like 11 videos up there you can watch, and
yep.
You're real.
Yep.
You any music videos coming up on the horizon?
I've got two. Okay, so Sweet Spirit Hat, they Andrew mm-hmm. Cashin and Sabrina Ellis are in Sweet Spirit, and they are also in this other band called The Giant Dog.
Yes.
And they had some... a couple videos come up, and they're like, hey, do you want to direct these? And so I was like, yeah. And it was one of the first projects I did post-Shattered Arms, so that was pretty, like, awesome that I was able to
get. So those are kind of in the can, waiting to come out?
One of them is.
One of them is, okay.
And now we're in pre-production for the other one, and they're going to all be released over the next few months to coincide with the release of their new album in May, I believe.
Good.
So, yeah, yeah. And then I'm doing
they're such nice people.
Yeah,
and
they're
so cool.
They turn out to be very cool. I couldn't really wish anything more from them. They're just wonderful people. And
yeah, I'm glad you guys met, because you make a good
totally.
You make a really good team.
Totally, yeah,
you really
think,
do.
Yeah, we were kind of on the same wavelength, I
yeah.
think. And the big thing between the both the connection there is, I think there's a mutual trust. You
yeah,
know, they trust me to kind of do what I want to do, and I trust that they're like making good material and what they, you know, that's a huge, huge, huge part of
huge.
Making things yeah. collaboratively. Is like you got to trust the people.
They're cool like that. I mean, what they've done with Mike McCarthy, like recording wise, mm-hmm. is fucking always over the top, great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they really champion these, like, you know, like they continually work with Mike McCarthy.
Yeah.
They're continually working with me and
yeah.
and various other people that they do, because they do care about, like.
They
the,
do.
The artists here in town
yeah.
that aren't, you know.
And, you know, they have like a, Sweet Spirit has a huge publicist.
Mm-hmm.
And like, they came on the show because I was like, hey, just saw you got a new album out. You want to
yeah.
come over?
Mm-hmm.
They came over. But then they ended up somehow hooking me up with them. And I just started getting emails from their publicist. And I've interviewed a couple, like this guy, Frank Turner, is a pretty big artist from
cool.
England that was here.
Okay.
Some pretty cool artists because of them.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's a wonderful group.
Yeah, they're just a really nice, very cool group of people.
They're really still trying to just stay, I don't know, they're genuine people. They're not, I think they have to probably be sharky and kind of businessy more than they would maybe want to be. But, you know, like anybody who's kind of at that level, the stuff they're having to deal with probably. But they still are like very human and very like compassionate
yeah.
people. I
yeah.
don't know. But they're pretty strange too, which I really
yeah,
like.
Yeah, they're weird as shit.
I really like that about them, yeah.
Yeah. Well, man, I'm glad that you came over and did this. Is there anything that I'm missing? Anything you want people to know before you go?
This is cool. Yeah. I appreciate you.
I'll put a link up on the Facebook and on the page and stuff about like to the Vimeo page and stuff so people can see your work.
Yeah, that'd be cool. That's like my It's all on YouTube as well and just various places, but the Vimeo is where I kind of That's where I compile it so that I can send it to people. They're like, well, "Like, what do you do?"
Right.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, John.
Yes, I appreciate it, Johnny. Because we're unashamed.
X is for the sweat reflecting from your body. All right. Filmmaker, actor, and musician John Valley, V-A-L-L-E-Y. Look him up on Vimeo and on YouTube. The guy's absolutely fantastic. He's done a couple of great videos for Sweet Spirit, for Whiskey Shivers, for Daniel Jack, for Matthew Squires, for New Medicine. All kinds of great videos, man. Get out there and check him out. I will post a link to it on our Facebook page, which hopefully you like by now. How Did I Get Here? Like our Facebook page. And you'll be updated on all kinds of things with guests. In fact, you'll see a picture of me and John up there if you like it. So don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast. I suggest also Stitcher. Try that out. That's a streaming service. Fantastic. Find it in your app store at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Thank you so much for listening to the show. Let's hear some more music from Sweet Spirit. Hey, thank you, John, for coming. Everyone get out there and check out his Vimeo page, John Valley, V-A-L-L-E-Y. All right? Have a great day. Let's get down. Wow.